VOA News, I'm Tommy McNeil. The United States Wednesday took action to disrupt an Iranian oil shipping network it accuses of funding terrorism. Meanwhile, President Donald Trump expressed optimism about engaging in diplomacy with Tehran. Details from VOA's White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman.
As the United States sanctioned individuals, entities, and tankers to disrupt Iran's oil shipping network, Trump struck an upbeat note about the possibility of diplomacy with that country.
Well, we're going to see what happens. They want to talk. They want to make a deal.
According to the U.S. Treasury Department, over the past year, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps and Quds Force have moved oil worth hundreds of millions of dollars through a network benefiting Syria's government and Hezbollah. U.S. officials on Wednesday also announced a reward of up to $15 million for any person who helps disrupt such financial operations. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
Also Wednesday, Iran announced a further scaling back of its commitment to the 2015 nuclear deal with world powers. President Hassan Rouhani said in a televised speech that the move involves a development of centrifuges and will take place on Friday. After 2 days of onslaught by Hurricane Dorian, at least seven people are dead. Thousands are homeless in the Bahamas, and the death toll is likely to rise. AP Shelley Adler reports that Bahamian Americans in South Florida have set up a donation drive.
This is the story of resilience of a community.
Ken Russell, one of Miami's city commissioners, on what residents in South Florida who have relatives in the Bahamas are doing with extra food and water they no longer need.
They started getting together, the local churches, the local businesses. And those churches, in addition to our fire stations, have been flooded with the generosity of the city of Miami.
All supplies, including boxes of diapers, will be flown to the devastated islands of Abaco and Grand Bahama. I'm Shelley Adler.
And this is VOA News. Dorian is gradually moving toward the U.S. coast, aiming for the Carolinas. There are large-scale evacuations taking place in several states. Pope Francis is asking for prayers for hurricane victims. AP correspondent Walter Radcliffe.
Pope Francis is urging prayers for victims of Hurricane Dorian, saying they're suffering from the loss of their homes and their lives. Francis made the appeal in brief remarks to journalists traveling aboard the papal plane to Mozambique at the start of a three-nation visit to southern Africa. Francis urged the journalists to pray for all those in the Bahamas, which suffered the most powerful storm in its history. Dorian flooded homes, hospitals, and airports and made roads impassable. The full scope of the damage is still unknown. I'm Walter Ratliff.
The Pope was met by thousands of excited Mozambicans Wednesday, including the president, as he began his first papal visit to the southern African country. The pontiff says that he brings a message of peace to the war-ravaged nation. In a recorded message released ahead of his arrival, the Pope addressed Mozambicans in the nation's dominant language, and that's Portuguese. He said that you are in my prayers. He also invited them to join him in prayer that God brings peace and reconciliation to Mozambique and throughout Africa. The Pentagon has signed off on using military construction project funding to pay for President Trump's southern border wall. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani.
Defense Chief Mark Esper has approved deferring 127 projects, freeing up $3.6 billion to fund the border wall. The Pentagon's not immediately saying which projects will be affected, only that they're both in the U.S. and overseas and will not affect housing or critical infrastructure. While officials say the projects are not being canceled, there's no guarantee Congress will refund them. Lawmakers refused earlier this year to approve nearly $6 billion for the wall and will now have to decide if they'll replace any of the military construction money. Sagar Magani, Washington.
A U.S. citizen who joined the Islamic State terror group is facing new charges and possibility of life behind bars. The U.S. Justice Department officials filed a new 5-count indictment against 43-year-old Ruslan Asanov of New York in federal court Tuesday. The indictment charges him with conspiracy to provide material support to IS, providing IS personnel training and expert advice in weapons, receiving military-type training from IS, and obstruction of justice. If convicted of all the additional charges, he could face a life sentence. U.S. officials repatriated him in July, sometime after he had been captured in Syria by the U.S.-backed Syrian Democratic Forces. Court documents say that he is a naturalized citizen who came to the U.S. from Kazakhstan. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, September the 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia's first Supreme Court Associate Justice to be impeached has sued the government in the ECOWAS Court of Justice.
We are asking the court to make a declaration to the effect that if the procedures were flouted, then there has been no impeachment.
Kabina Janet is the former Liberian Supreme Court Associate Justice. A UN commission warns of possible genocide in Burundi. More than 90% of Sierra Leone students who took the West Africa School Certificate examination fail. We will speak with the Minister of Education. And Pope Francis arrives in Mozambique with a message of peace for a fragile country.
We know he will talk about poor people. He will talk about environment. He will talk about peace. He will talk about universal fraternity. Not in a simple way, with his own spiritual words.
Father Giorgio Ferretti is a parish priest at the Cathedral of Maputo. Striking doctors in Zimbabwe push back on government's call for them to return to work. And Cameroon separatists have filed an appeal against the conviction and sentences of their leaders. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In March this year, former Liberian Supreme Court Associate Justice Kabina Jane was impeached by the Senate and his conviction upheld by the full bench of the Supreme Court. He had been accused of granting a writ of prohibition petition brought by petroleum dealers in the country to stop the government from collecting a U.S. 25 cents tax on the pump price of petroleum. Now, Associate Justice Jane has sued the Liberian government in the Community Court of Justice of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS. He says the impeachment violated his rights to a fair hearing and impartial trial as guaranteed by the African Charter on Human and People's Rights and Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the Liberian Constitution.
The entire process leaves you with no alternative but to seek judicial remedy in a different forum. And that's why I was compelled to file a formal application before the ECOWAS Community Court of Justice in Abuja, working with a team of lawyers from West Africa, including Nigeria, to ensure that there is a declaration to effect that the entire process was unfair and violates the African Charter on Human and People's Rights and the rights that are guaranteed under the Universal Declaration of Human Rights.
Justice Kabina Jane, okay, you said the impeachment process was illegal or was not fair, but there was a hearing in the Liberian legislature, and as you mentioned also, the judicial process took place. Could you say exactly why you feel the process was flawed?
In the first place, Mr. Bote, the Constitution of Liberia, under Article 43, requires that the legislature put in place what the Constitution calls a rule of procedure to guide any process called impeachment. Since the Constitution of Liberia came into being in 1986, to date, the legislature has not prescribed any procedure for impeachment in Liberia. So how can you subject a person to a process where there are no rules? So we are saying that not only the Constitution was flouted, but the whole process, all of these things were constituted to ensure that I didn't get any fair hearing. And this is a violation of my rights.
There were some reports during the impeachment proceedings suggesting that perhaps some of the senators were either bribed to take a vote. Did you hear that? And what's your take on that?
Well, you know, as a man of the law, I do not wish to speculate on what happened in the darkness. All I know is that when we asked the judiciary personnel that came to preside over the case, who himself had participated in some of the processes, to say, look, you have to recuse yourself, he refused. So all they wanted to do was to ensure that at the end there was this trial called impeachment trial and that I be removed from the court. In my judgment, it is believable that there were other motivations But I do not wish to speculate on those because I do not have in my possession any empirical evidence to support that.
Justice Janet, let's assume that you win the case. What do you want? Will you be seeking a monetary reward or just to clear your name?
Well, the combination of many things, including clearing my name. What we are asking the court to do is to say, restore the person if he was illegally removed. And the moment the court makes that determination, that's our prayer. Order the government of Liberia to set aside the action it took and restore the person who have been removed illegally.
Justice Kabina Janet, thank you very much for speaking with us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you so much, Emperor.
Kabina Janet is a former Associate Justice of the Liberian Supreme Court. He was speaking with us from New Delhi, India. Sierra Leone's Ministry of Education says it will today, Thursday, begin a comparative analysis of the results of this year's West Africa School Certificate Examination. More than 90% of Sierra Leone students who took the exam failed. Alpha Osman Timbo, Sierra Leone's Minister of Education, says the purpose of the analysis will be to see which regions and schools the students who failed the exam came from. Sierra Leone President Julius Maada Bio last year launched the country's free education program for primary and secondary school children. Education Minister Timbo says the government is not surprised by the failure results.
When His Excellency the President launched the free school education program, we added the word quality because we believe that Sierra Leone over the years has passed through a situation where the educational system has been questionable. So it is no surprise because we want people to get the results that they deserve.
Are you saying, Mr. Minister, that President Maada Bio's government has been streamlined in the educational system and that has resulted in the results?
Definitely. You know, it's unfortunate that the credibility of our public examination has been questioned over the years. So we experienced a situation where the vast majority of people within the education sector have been doing things that are definitely not befitting the nation. So we believe we have to change the narrative by making sure that Sierra Leone, which used to be the Athens of West Africa, must be seen to revert to that particular situation once again. And the best way we'll be able to do that is to ensure that we do not only provide quality instruction, but we have to make sure also that the examinations that we conduct, we do that with integrity.
So what do you say to those who say the government introduced free education and yet you have these results? Is there a blame on the part of the government?
No, that is why exactly the president introduced the free quality school education program. As I said, we have done the diagnostic before this time. We knew that the situation has been very appalling. I thought it was just a situation where people want to see things being done cosmetically. We want to see a return from the situation that we have been to a situation where we can be compared to other nations like the United States of America. So it's a deliberate action by government to make sure that we ensure we put measures that will make sure that students taking the examinations are made to take the examinations that are credible. So at the end of the day, the certificate that you receive should be a certificate that is worthy to be received by the individual.
What do you say to those who say there's not quality preparation on the part of the schools for the students who are going to take the WAET? They are not properly prepared.
That is true. It shows the quality of our teachers also has to be questioned. And these are facts that we are able to appreciate as a government. So we believe we don't have to give a situation as if everything is okay. No. Until we face the absolute realism, then we'll be able to solve the problem. Our teachers need to be improved in terms of their professional competence. That is why government has recently passed a cabinet professionalizing the teaching profession. From now moving forward, teachers are going to be issued with license for them to enter into the profession. But as of now, the situation we inherited is really appalling.
Alpha Osman Timbo is Sierra Leone's Minister of Education. He was speaking with us from the capital, Freetown. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, September the 5th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. The United Nations Commission of Inquiry on Burundi says the country, following years of political turmoil, is primed for a genocide. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, where on Wednesday the Commission unveiled its latest report on Burundi's human rights situation.
The Commission's warning is based on an analysis developed by the UN Office for the Prevention of Genocide and the Responsibility to Protect. The three-member panel finds eight common risk factors for criminal atrocities leading to a possible genocide are present in Burundi. Factors include an unstable political, economic, and social environment, a climate of impunity for human rights violations, a weak judicial system, and the absence of an independent press and freedom of expression, among others. UN Commission member Françoise Hampson says the criteria identified by the Genocide Prevention Committee indicates that in countries where these factors are present, there is a risk the situation could deteriorate.
On top of that, our own report, one, shows the continuation of violations of human rights law based on human security, so things like arbitrary killings, torture, arbitrary detention, and this year a deterioration, freedom of expression, freedom of association. Now that is actually already getting worse compared to last year.
Burundi has been in a state of tension and turmoil since President Pierre Nkurunziza ran for a third term in 2015, defying critics who said he was violating constitutional term limits. Violence prompted more than 300,000 to flee the country. Hampson says the crisis in Burundi is essentially a political one. She notes targeting people because of their political affiliation does not come within the definition of genocide according to the Genocide Convention. However,
there are elements on occasion where there is an ethnic dimension. There are sometimes taunts of people in detention, and there have in the past been the chants of the Imbonerakure when they've been gathering, which have got hateful content.
The UN report documents widespread human rights violations by the Imbonerakure, the youth wing of the ruling party, including intimidation and harassment of political opponents, activists, journalists, and human rights defenders. After the report's release on Wednesday, Willie Niamitwe, a senior advisor to Nkurunziza, tweeted a message that said, "Burundi is no longer interested in responding to lies and manipulation of opinion on the part of some Westerners whose aim is to destabilize Burundi." Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Some junior doctors in Zimbabwe's five public hospitals have pushed back on government's call for them to return to work while they negotiated their grievances over allowances. Earlier in the week, the Hospital Doctors Association issued an ultimatum to the government to meet their demand for increased cost of living allowances or they will not report to work. The doctors acknowledged receiving an increase of about 50 to 60 US dollars, but Acting Association President Dr. Peter Magumbiye says the money is not enough for them to report to work.
I can confirm that the money has been punched into our accounts.
How much are you going to get as an adjustment as doctors?
It's in between 600 and 700 RTGS, which is in US terms, equates to between 50 US dollars and 60 US dollars as the cost of living allowance. And we are saying it's not enough again.
But you were saying you are not on strike, you are incapacitated. Is this not enough, for example, to assist you when it comes to transport and food?
It's surely not enough. This money has actually lost value in our own setting that it can actually get finished in less than 3 days. We'll be actually crying again.
So what would be adequate for doctors to be able to resume work without downing tools or being incapacitated as you are putting it?
I think the prevailing interbank rate is our minimum requirement.
But the government is saying it is cash-strapped at the moment and it is trying to turn around the economy and they are pleading for more time.
Yes, we surely appreciate the efforts being made by our government and our employer, suffice to say, but we believe they can do better than that.
And the Health Services Board is also saying that you are negotiating in bad faith, in that you are agreeing, for example, to salary adjustments, and then later on you down tools. What is your response to that?
I don't think the doctors are negotiating in bad faith, but it is actually the other way around, because at some point in time we were being threatened from suspected government security forces to accept the very meager stipend of 60% as their cost of living allowance. So we think they are the ones who might be negotiating in bad faith, but not really addressing our concern that the money is not enough.
Dr. Peter Magumbiye is the president of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association. He spoke with Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Meanwhile, Dr. Paulinas Sikosana, who chairs the Zimbabwe Health Services Board, which is responsible for doctors' salaries, says the doctors are not giving negotiation a chance to resolve the issue. Dr. Sikosana says the government has approached the Treasury for extra money to address the doctors' concerns.
The doctors actually said that they are not going on strike. They said they are incapacitated, whatever that means. They said they are not able to come to work. But anyway, it's a withdrawal of labor, which is a really unlawful labor action.
Are the demands reasonable, though?
We understand the situation in which we are, or they are, because of the economic situation in the country. And the attempt that the government and as a board we have done is enter into negotiations with the health workers, of which doctors are part of. And we actually reached an agreement on the 28th, though there were conditionalities from the health workers themselves.
What were the conditions of accepting the deal?
They will take the cost of living adjustment. However, their opinion was that it was inadequate to address their plight, which we are in agreement with as a board as well as a government. And the undertaking was that we will have continuous dialogue. And one of the issues they wanted was also a review of what we call health-specific allowances, you know, locums, night duty, you know, those that are specific to the health workers.
Have you engaged the finance minister about this request?
We have since submitted a proposal to Treasury on scenarios for the review of these allowances. Treasury is yet to come back to us.
Dr. Paulinas Sikosana is chairman of the Zimbabwe Health Services Board. He spoke from Harare with Blessing Zulu of the Zimbabwe Service. 10 leaders of Cameroon's separatist movement, known as Ambazonia, have launched an appeal against their conviction and sentencing late last month in a military court to life in prison on charges of terrorism, rebellion, and secession. Human Rights Watch says the trial raises serious human rights concerns. Cecilia Binwi, a spokesperson for the Ambazonian Governing Council, spoke to Ricky Stryak about why the group is objecting to the trial.
We want to say that this trial, first of all, is unacceptable because these leaders are actually tried in a military tribunal, and I agree with those who say this is not fair. These are people, these are civilians who were arrested or kidnapped from Nigeria, extradited to Cameroon, kept incommunicado for over 8 months and didn't have the right to their legal aid, were deprived from communicating with their family members and even foreign international bodies that came to investigate this issue or see these people and talk with them were actually denied access.
In this trial, there has only been French spoken, and those on trial, as I understand it, don't speak French. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
They're unable to understand what's being said about them, basically.
Definitely. You cannot try people in a court that is not in a language that is not their first language. Definitely, you are supposed, you have a right to an interpreter. You have a right to understand exactly what the questions that are posing to you. And if you don't understand them, you have a right to look for somebody that can interpret these questions for you to understand them before you can actually answer them. And if all these are taken away from them and they are not given the opportunity to even speak in their own language or use the language that they understand best, then we can say that this is unfair to them. It violates their right to fair trial and to stand before a tribunal that is actually worthy of listening to their cases.
Do you think this will inflame tensions even more between the Ambazonia interim government in the Anglophone region and Cameroonian government of Biya?
Definitely it is. And I want to just state here that if you indeed follow the trial, you will know that these people actually declared in court that they are not Cameroonians. So the Cameroon court has no right, no jurisdiction to try them. And that is true because they hail from Ambazonia and the language is English. And we have courts in Ambazonia that actually implement the common law system. And if at all they were supposed to be tried, it should have been in their own region using the courts that they understand the common law systems and judges that understand the common law system. So taking Anglophones or Ambazonians, I would say Ambazonians, to a French military tribunal in Yaoundé is actually even violating their rights. So it brings more tension. And if you listen, you heard them well, we are not Cameroonians, so we have no right to appear before this court.
Cecilia Binwe is a spokesperson for the Ambazonian Separatist Governing Council. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. Pope Francis was met by thousands of excited Mozambicans on Wednesday, including President Filipe Nyusi, as he made his first visit to the southern African country. The pontiff says he brings a message of peace to the war-ravaged nation. Views Anita Powell reports from Maputo, the first stop on the Pope's three-nation Africa tour.
There was excitement as Pope Francis arrived in Mozambique at the start of a three-nation Africa tour. He landed Wednesday night at Maputo's airport to a jubilant crowd. Many women wore capulanas, traditional Mozambican cloth, printed with colorful images of the pontiff. Military bands played, and President Filipe Nyusi escorted the pontiff to meet clergy and the youth as he disembarked. In a recorded message ahead of his Wednesday arrival, Pope Francis addressed Mozambicans in the nation's dominant language, Portuguese.
Estáis todos na minha oração. Aceio pelo momento de vos encontrar.
I cannot wait to meet you, he says. You are all in my prayers. I invite you all to join in my prayer that the God and Father of all may bring about fraternal reconciliation in Mozambique and throughout Africa, which is the only hope for a solid and lasting peace. That's a powerful message, Mozambicans say, especially in the wake of a recent peace agreement that aims to end two decades of violence that followed a brutal 16-year civil war. However, cracks are beginning to appear in the fragile deal, with members of the opposition Renamo Party accusing members of the ruling Frelimo Party of attacking their members in rural Mozambique. The two parties were the main combatants in the civil war. Pope Francis will meet with lawmakers, youth, and clergy, giving three speeches on Thursday before leading a mass on Friday. Father Giorgio Ferretti, parish priest of the Cathedral of Maputo, says he also expects the pontiff to address other major challenges that Mozambique faces.
We know he will talk about poor people, he will talk about environment, he will talk about peace, he will talk about universal fraternity, but not in a simple way, with his own spiritual words, and that is what we are looking for and waiting for to hear.
After Mozambique, the Pope will continue to the island nations of Madagascar and Mauritius. Francis also sent advance video messages to those nations. He spoke in Italian to Mauritians, who speak English, French, Creole, and Hindi, and to the Malagasy people who speak French and Malagasy. That's because, he said, the language of the gospel is love. Anita Powell, VOA News, Maputo.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. With anti-immigrant violence sweeping parts of South Africa, Nigeria on Wednesday urged its citizens to refrain from vengeance, even as at least two major South African-owned companies have suspended some operations there because of attacks. In a Twitter post on Wednesday, the Information Ministry for Nigeria, the continent's biggest economy, said the federal government has appealed to Nigerians not to attack South African companies. And that is it for this Thursday, September the 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.